as we're going to start the part of the agenda dealing with the debate between the candidates tonight, or among them, I'm not going to read the rules verbatim because you should have them. But I just want to remind everybody, including the candidates, about the time limitations, which is the most important thing, seems to me. Each candidate in the congressional and county board panels will have 3 minutes for an opening statement and 2 minutes for a closing statement. Each candidate in the school board panel will have 2 minutes for an opening statement with no closing statement. Each candidate, and that, as you know, the two school board candidates are opposed. Each candidate in the congressional panel will have 90 seconds to answer each question posed to any member of their panel. Each candidate in the county board and school board panels will have 2 minutes to answer each question posed to any member of the panel. The order of answering questions will rotate with each new question unless the question is posed directly to one member of the panel, in which case that candidate will answer first. Candidates will be informed by cue card when 1 minute remains, when 30 seconds remain, and when they're cut off when time has expired. For questions, there'll only be a cue card with 30 seconds remaining and time expired. And I'm going to say that, having done this before, not here, but other places, that I intend to be pretty rigid about the enforcement of the time limits. And when it comes to your questions, no less so, and after 30 seconds, when I see the cue card about the 30-second limitation on the questions, I'm going to ask you to complete the sentence and not have a run-on sentence, as a matter of fact. All right, we will start a few minutes early, but it seems to me that is Ron Fisher here? Yes, good. Well, all three candidates for Congress are here. Will they please come up and be seated?
It's
going to
be tough because
I'm in the chair.
What
is the diversity training?
Those to rotate.
Oh, okay.
There is.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I want the three of you to choose. This is going to be the order of your speaking, so choose a straw.
There's no music for these chairs.
All right.
Cue the music.
All right. We are ready 3 minutes early, but that's all right. And so we'll start with the first candidate who chose the number one in the straw, and that's Ron Fisher, the candidate of the Independent Green Party for Congress. Mr. Fisher?
I'm Ron Fisher. I'm the Independent Green candidate for the 8th Congressional District. I'm a responsible, caring family man, an engineer, businessman, honors graduate of the Naval Academy, a retired Navy captain, also a historic man of submarine. I've served on 4 submarines, and I think this is where I really learned about responsibility. We couldn't ever get back to the city if we weren't ready when we left. There was no place to go out there to accomplish tourists or anything, so we had to be responsible. I couldn't tell the captain, hey, I'm taking care of the transportation, but the food, but we don't have enough time to train people to firefight. So you had to be ready, and I did. I think I do understand responsibility. I think right now we do have tremendous problems with our government. The debt is $53 trillion obligation, $10.5 trillion. It's growing at $4 trillion a year. We have an economic recession, a depression on the way. And I'm very positive about doing something about this. We're going to have to change a lot of people out of time. And we're laying off people. The more people that get laid off, the less people are to buy things. as we run the bike fittings before people are going to lay off, it's a downward spiral. And we will not be able to spend our way out of this. We're, like I say, we're $10.5 trillion in the hole, but we do have some problems. And I won't spend a lot of time describing some things about my cancer myself, but I do have a website that's the week with Ron Fisher for Congress. And I also have a, more importantly, I have a not-for-profit website that I worked on for a couple of years. It's wethepeopledown.org. And it has a platform for what we need to do. Like I say, we have to do everything. We can't just say, okay, we're going to take care of this and that. We have publishers' transportation policy. We've got to build well. We've got to get people out of the cars and stop for that. And I was asked the question if by the league, I had brought a questionnaire, and they asked, could we have programs we need, and could we get deficit reduction? The answer is absolutely. We have to do that. And it can't just be deficit reduction. It has to be decreasing the capital, the amount of debt, because otherwise the debt is going to accumulate exponentially as they compound the interest on it. So it's going up about $4 trillion a year. So we have to do this. We absolutely have to stop this war. We have to get health care for people. A lot of things. It's all on my website. And whether you vote for me or not, I really would appreciate your looking at the website, We the People Now, and working on, work together to get this justice funding under control. Thank you.
And next we have Mark Elmore, who is the Republican candidate for Congress.
Well, thank you so much for being here tonight, folks. I can't tell you how much it means to me to have the privilege and honor to stand before you this evening. It's a dream come true to be able to stand here as a candidate, to honestly just stand before you today and say thank you. I want to thank Mr. Moran for his service to the community. I want to thank Mr. Fisher for participating tonight. And basically, my story is one like many of you, and that is that I was born here, I was raised here. I've raised my family here. I've worked in this district my entire life. I've served the community in many different ways, both philanthropically and in many other community and constituent-related endeavors that make it so that I feel that my background, both personally and professional experiences, both qualify me to stand before you tonight and say, hey, I would like an opportunity to serve you as a member of the United States House of Representatives. And hopefully we'll get some good question and answer time tonight. I look forward to that. But folks, I stand strongly when it comes to taxes and spending cuts. I think that right now that our country is in peril economically because we've just gotten out of hand with our spending. I think that we do need to make it so that the tax cuts that we have can remain permanent so that our small business owners, leaders, and those families that are hardworking middle-class Americans can step forward and have more money in their pocket every payday. I believe that from the bottom of my heart, that in these troubled times, that by raising taxes, that we're going to put the economy in further peril, and we have literally spent ourselves almost to the brink of catastrophe here. I believe that we need a new and comprehensive program when it comes to earmark spending. Again, I think right now we need transparency in Congress. We need to make it so that when we do spend money, and if there are earmark opportunities, that we do that with the utmost care, so that we can make sure that we are absolutely positively taking the best care of our taxpayers' dollars. I believe that when it comes to transportation needs here in Northern Virginia, that we haven't done enough, that we do need to get rail to Dulles done, that we absolutely need to get people to telework, virtual office, and hotel, and get people tax credits for cycling to work, so that we stop getting people to talk about moving people, but that we start getting people to work where they live. And when it comes to our national security issues, I've got a son who's actively serving in the United States military overseas, so I don't want you for a minute to think that I, for any way, shape, or form, take that in a cavalier approach. And that I truly believe that we're having success, that the surge is working, that we do need to bring our troops home immediately, but they must come home with their heads held high. So I just hope you'll open your hearts and minds to the message, that you'll take time to listen, take time to get to know me, and just come forward with an open mind. And that's all we can ask is a fair and open opportunity for our responsibility to serve as citizen activists. And I want to thank you all again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elmore. Now Moran, the Democratic candidate.
Thanks very much, Dan. And I want to recognize Chairman Tejada of the Arlington County Board and those civic leaders in the audience. Actually, all of you are either political or civic activists, and you should be proud of yourselves. I was just reading a report put out by Columbia University and the Rockefeller Foundation, Annenberg Foundation. They looked at all 436 congressional districts in the country, including D.C. And they found that the 8th Congressional District of Virginia finished either first or second among all 436 in terms of quality of life issues, health, education, income, et cetera. So you ought to be proud of yourselves. I say that not to take particular credit myself, because at best I only played a marginal facilitating role, but I certainly am proud to represent this community in Northern Virginia. We're doing the right thing. There are some more things that we could be doing that I think we should be doing. Transit along Columbia Pike, certainly we need to complete that project. Getting rail out to Dulles so we relieve some of the traffic congestion, particularly on I-66. We need to keep the research and development of the hub that we have in the Clarendon-Ballston corridor. A lot of things that I think we will work on. Early childhood development is a particular interest, because I think it pays tremendous dividends. But on a national scale, that's where I am held accountable for the decisions I've made. And I continue to stand with the decision to co-author the refusal to authorize military force in Iraq many years ago now. We should not have gone into Iraq, and I'm consistently opposed to that. I also have opposed tax cuts that are not paid for. We've gone from a projected surplus of $5.6 trillion to $3.5 trillion of projected deficit. That's not responsible. Somebody has to pay that money, and it ought not be our children, because they have to pay it off with interest. The stimulus it provides is only about 13%. So most of it is on borrowed money that we borrow from other countries. I've also opposed the cuts in energy research. This administration has cut about 80% from energy research and wind and solar power and making appliances more efficient. I strongly support increasing the energy efficiency standards for vehicles up by to 35 miles per gallon by 2020. I wish we could go further. I think we ought to mandate alternative energy on the part of utility companies. There's a lot we should be doing, I think we could be doing, and I intend to support, and I hope we get a presidential administration that makes it a little easier to get those things done. Thank you very much.
Dr. Moran. And now we come to the question period, which you should be interested in equally. Well, this has worked out very well this time. There. Yes. We have these four names of questioners that have been randomly drawn, I've just been assured. And the first one... Oh, yes. Frank will be here with the mic. The first is John Bilstadt of Taraleeway Heights. John? And as you know, you can either direct a question to a member or just to the panel itself.
Right, thanks. John Bilstadt, Taraleeway Heights. My question applies to all three of you. Both Senator Obama and Senator McCain have talked a great deal during this campaign about bipartisanship, the need to reach across the aisles, Democrat to Republican, Republican to Democrat. Number one, do each of you agree with that general attitude? And number two, can each of you cite any instance where you have reached across party lines or intend to reach across party lines or deviate from your own party's orthodoxy on any particular issue. Thank you.
So that goes to the panel itself, John?
Yes.
Who member would like to join?
I'll jump in.
Mr. Elmore?
Yeah, first and foremost, I would like to say absolutely. One of the things I'm credited with when I'm out at Delray Farmers Market or the Farmers Market, when I'm at these farmers markets and other venues just meeting voters and talking to people, that's one of the things that they really gravitate to is the fact that I'm considered a common sense citizen activist. So absolutely, I think that we need to lose a lot of this, oh, well, when you go out and I'm talking to people, you're a Republican or you're a Democrat. And listen, we've all got a common goal, and that's to keep people safe and to keep the quality of life high. So with that, I think that the one issue where somebody would say, well, Elmore, you know what? All your work and work, you're chairman of an African American missions organization. You work here in the community here for Habitat for Humanity. I set up and run what's called the Greater Kingstown Clean Till It's Green. So my record and my support of what some people would say as an environmentalist was supporting teleworking and virtual officing and hoteling and some of these outside-the-box things with mass transportation and more creative, innovative ways to get us to stop talking about moving people. Some people would say, well, you know what, that really crosses over. But I think that, you know, in this environment, I think people are more kind of right here with you're a little bit over here maybe on a couple of issues. And I think that that's one way that I believe that I would step out and say, hey, you know what, we've all got the same mission, and that's to take care of everyone in this community in respect, love, and care for everyone.
Very good. In a technology-based economy like Northern Virginia, international trade is critically important. You can't make a profit unless you can expand your market of consumers. And I've been a Democratic whip on almost every major trade agreement. I was in the minority in my party, but we were able to pass them. In the Clinton administration, that was especially the case. Also, during the Clinton administration, I was one of the original sponsors of the Balanced Budget Amendment, as well as welfare reform. And by doing so, we were able to modify it in a way that was acceptable. With regard to the Lorton Prison, Tom Davis and I worked together. And I set aside hundreds of acres for the Bureau of Land Management, and we were able to establish the Northern Virginia Regional Park and what is now called Laurel Hills. But it worked out tremendously for everybody involved, and it was jointly done. Both Tom Davis, Frank Wolf, and I together put together an earmark for public safety services after 9/11, so that the police, the fire, the emergency medical departments are the very finest, highest quality in the nation because of that earmark that we worked on together. We did it in a Republican Congress and a Republican administration. So when it's necessary and in the best interests of my constituents, I think I've proven I can do that.
Thank you.
Yes, I agree with that. We should have cooperation. I would even say, many years ago, it was more when people were in Congress, they were legislators, and they were not as much Democrats or Republicans, worked together a lot better in cases. They were not always. I really believe in teamwork. I haven't had any opportunities in the legislature or whatever branch. I've been on a lot of civic associations, but teamwork, you really learn that in a nuke submarine and on the ships. And so I believe in that. Now, I would say the examples that Congressman Rand used, it might have been between the Democrats and the Republicans, but it really sided against all the people. Those free trade agreements, so-called, are hurting our economy tremendously, the CAFTA, the NAFTA. They really need to be repealed. We need to not be isolationists. We need to help the other countries with their economy, but we shouldn't be doing that. And and I believe there's not a lot of difference in the two political parties today. I think they both are on a spending binge. We've got a lot of people that are behind this absolutely undeclared war. And I'm not saying get out of there immediately. I'm saying it has to be an immediate ceasefire because it's an illegal war. But we really do need to look at the basic principles and And it's the people that are important. I think we need to get the people in charge of Congress. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have the next questioner, Ann Rudd, with, from the Windenburg Civic Association. Ann?
If elected, what will be your first priority in the new Congress?
Me?
What will be your
elected,
first priority?
What will be your first priority in the new Congress? All three of you.
Is that acceptable? Same order? Or you want to know? You were first.
My first priority would be job generations. I would encourage these corporations not to lay off people, cut back on the work week. That's the town I grew up in. They did that during the Depression. And I would, we need to get this war over with, get those troops home, be sure they've got jobs, and get jobs. People with jobs will pay taxes, they'll pay Social Security, instead of the economic stimulus package, which our Congress has passed through. We need to get people employed and jobs. I would like to just add, the critical thing about this too is getting the war over with and getting the people from all over the world back to the United States. One of our biggest expenditures is the Defense Department. We need that money to get people jobs. We're spending a tremendous amount of money on the war, defense spending. We spend more than all the rest of the world put together. Mr. Moran knows all these figures. He's on the Appropriations Committee. And so we tie this together, but the critical thing is getting the economy really going with meaningful work for the people. There's plenty to do. We have to get ready for global warming. We have to get ready for get our transportation squared away. And there are plenty of resources. We've got an abundance of smart people here that can get this working. And that's, that goes into the working together on Congress. Thank you, Moran.
I've got 8 years of first priorities that have been built up, but a lot depends upon whether we get a new a president that's going to make a substantial difference, of course, what we're able to do. But let's pretend, and I don't think it's too much of a stretch to suggest that Barack Obama and Joe Biden will come into the White House in January. And if and when that is the case, the first thing I'm going to do is to try to move our military posture from what you might call hard power now, leading with military might to achieve our objectives, to more smart power. The Iraq War does not lend itself to a military victory, and I doubt that the Iraq War, that the Afghanistan War does either. There's a little book called Three Cups of Tea that has a lot of insight into it. What we need to do is to win hearts and minds, and we can do that by showing that we are true to our principles, our values. We can help develop schools and health clinics, bring women more into the mainstream of economic and social life in those countries, and to lead by example, first of all. Eliminate torture, close down Guantanamo, use our military budget in a much more intelligent way. At the same time, it's critically important we wean ourselves from fossil fuels, and so we have got to put in alternative energy and restore the energy research and development budget. So those are some things I
thank you. From the bill
to the groundwork.
Well, I think job one for me, folks, is one issue that we have absolutely got to deal with, and that's this energy crisis, and that's why we're holding a town hall meeting with me and other members of Congress on September 15th over here at Edison High School. And what I would propose is a bill that is food, fuel, and freedom. And what I mean by that is we need to be off of foreign oil within 10 years. We need to make that a federal goal. And this is not being cliche. You know, I've been saying this for months and months on this food and fuel campaign, that if we can get a man on the moon within 10 years, we can absolutely make it a mandate to do this as a country. I believe, I believe that it's a three-part problem that we need to address. Obviously, our supply side, we need more natural gas. We need to be respectful in this age of scientific enlightenment, make sure that we're getting our own resources. I believe that we do need to do more when it comes to looking at alternative fuels, wind, solar, nuclear, wet coal, doing all the things that we need to on that side of it. And then the other part is conservation, and that again comes down to getting people to work where they live, getting people to cycle, getting people to do the common sense things when applicable to be able to do that. But I think, folks, if we band together as a country and we rebuild our auto industry and we clean these roads up and we get mass transportation done, we will have a great quality of life here. And I just think that's job one first. That's something will have a direct impact on every person in this country, because our young people, they can't afford gas and they can't afford food for their families. Thank you.
By all three candidates in terms of their limiting themselves to the time. And I also want to say what I should have said earlier, that Larry Mayer, we have a very prestigious timekeeper over here, Larry Mayer. And Dale. Our third questioner is Dennis Dineen from the Highland Park Overly Knowles Civic Association. Dennis? And remember, you can address it either to a particular candidate or the panel.
I would ask all three, and they've already alluded to it, but I'm sure you've heard Boone Pickens has suggested that natural gas be stopped using it for to produce electricity and instead use it as a transportation fuel, and of course use wind to produce the electricity that used to be produced by natural gas. He suggested that some legislative, he needs some legislative help on that. If you're in Congress, would you help him and others like him to move forward on this?
You want me to start? Absolutely. I have voted three times in the last 2 years to do exactly what T. Boone Pickens has asked. Now, I didn't do it because he asked, but it was the right thing to do. We have a bill that provides a very substantial tax incentives, infrastructure, investment opportunities for solar, wind, power, and thermonuclear. We also want to develop hybrid vehicles, and we have an approach that will make it easier to purchase plug-in hybrid batteries and so on around the country. So it's a pretty comprehensive energy bill, but the Senate has turned it down three times now in the last 2 years. It's affordable. We pay for it. We do reduce the subsidies on oil companies. It's about $6 billion, but it seems to me they can afford that when they have record high profits at our expense. And it has to be done. It also includes a requirement that 15% of the output from utility companies be from alternative energy. Utility companies adamantly opposed that. We supported the Obama-Biden administration was as well. There are a lot of things we can do to wean ourselves off fossil fuels, but we needed to have started yesterday.
Well, with all due respect, Mr. Moran could have voted for the bipartisan bill before he went on vacation. So I say that bill was authored by John Peterson and some other folks. That bill had it all, folks. That had the Boone Pickens ideas and initiatives in there. But again, we need a comprehensive energy plan. We can talk until the cows come home about, well, we're going to maybe do that. We need a national mandate that we're going to do something about it. You see, talk is cheap, folks. We need action. And that's why I truly believe that if we look at this from, again, we talked about the environment, we talked about energy. These aren't Democrat and Republican issues. Gas prices and food prices are literally crippling those outside the Beltway that are working families. I had a young man from Reston with a disabled child saying, hey, I'd love to ride my bike to work, but I work 20 miles away and I'm a carpenter and I've got a toolbox. Will I put that on my Schwinn? So while it works here in some areas that we can do different things, we need a comprehensive plan to get these prices down. Let's try and do this the right way, and all the members of Congress band together. They had a wonderful bill, but they walked away. And I say that bill would have been the one that really could have done the job and got that forward. So that's where I stand, because I'm just an open-minded, common-sense guy.
the comprehensive plan. And one thing I would do is and absolutely the wind ideas of Thibault Pickett, he is going to make billions of dollars off of that. He will make billions. Now, I'm not against the free enterprise system, but the government's going to subsidize it, and he's going to take that money. Now, what's happening, for example, on these toll roads, an Australian company has paid, given a lot of campaign finance to our legislators and executive department people, and they're going to expect profits off those toll roads. And it's a bad idea in any case, but having a foreign country coming in and basically us subsidizing it massively. So the same thing will happen with these wind farms. So I would look very carefully at the privatization. People say, well, the government can't do those things. I overhauled nuclear submarines in the middle of the hurricane season with missiles on board out in the middle of the river in a World War II dry dock. We have the expertise to do that. So you really should look at the privatization. This is one of our problems, the oil in Iraq. We're there attempting to privatize their oil. The oil companies, greedy oil executives, the greedy traders want a percentage. You can do these things with technical services type contracts. We can do way better, I believe, than the private sector. Now, I agree, seems like they can do things very rapidly, but look at the privatization. Thank you. Now on to the fourth question, which will be asked by Tim Wise of Clarendon Courthouse.
My name is Tim Wise from Clarendon Courthouse. I'd like each of you to address the question of the, you know, we have a lot of young people in here that are going to get killed economically and financially by the train wreck known as the entitlements, Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid. Can you tell me what you will do to reduce that, the possibility of a train wreck?
We absolutely have to have a reduction in health care costs. We need to do things like have very good digitized records where people can go from doctor to doctor and not have to fill out all those forms. I think we need to pay the Medicare and Medicaid doctors. For example, we could do this at Walter Reed. They're going to shut it down. Make it into a Medicare, Medicaid, VA hospital and pay the doctors by the hour. Instead of, when you go to a hospital now, you pay for a massive amount of money for a few minutes of work. You pay for the radiologist that isn't hired by the hospital. But we could get a lot of people employed in a place like Walter Reed and the public health hospitals, and they could just pay the doctor by the hour instead of by the patient. And I can show you examples of this. $275 I paid to have a little few places burned off with a nitrogen. So we have to get under control. There's about a dozen other things. And there's a place on my website, wethepeoplenow.org, and all of these things are listed on there. And there's one on health care. If I had that here, I could read out about 10 things we could do. I think people here would have ideas. So what I'm asking you to do is look at that and see if there's one area. It's got transportation, what we can do, circulating buses, trolleys, trains, and all that. But we need to look at the ideas behind this. We can reduce the cost. We do need to have medical care for people. And it really should be publicly supported, comprehensive medical care. Thank you.
I'll give you a very specific thing I've done. The fastest rising portion of the entitlement budget is Medicare Part D prescription drugs. I voted against it because I felt it was wrong to prohibit the federal government from being able to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies on behalf of Medicare beneficiaries. That would have saved tens and over the years hundreds of billions of dollars. I also think we should be able to be more competitive by importing drugs when they're ruled safe by the FDA from Canada, because they pay a portion of a fraction of what we pay. There need to be some fundamental reforms within Social Security, but it needs to be done in a bipartisan way, not a gotcha manner. I think there are a lot of people who can work longer, but people who work by manual labor, it's not fair to force them to continue working past 65 when your body gives out and in your 50s. So we're going to have to make allowances for different kinds of occupations, and maybe through the disability program, whatever. But I do believe that Social Security and Medicare are intrinsic benefits that our American population needs and that senior citizens deserve. So I don't want to gut those programs, but I do think we can make them more efficient and fiscally responsible.
Well, I too see things in a similar fashion from the standpoint that, you know, this population is growing older. And what I mean by that is there are a number of people living well into beyond 100 years old. And it is, you know, my mom's 89 years old. She's in an assisted living facility down in Fredericksburg. And, you know, she's got the onset of Alzheimer's. And I know she's a retired government worker. She raised 7 kids in a little bungalow over in Virginia Hills, just a little bit of help. And I believe if it were not for those benefits that she gets, and again, there's so much more to it than that. But, you know, this is something we absolutely have to make sure that we don't get crazy with entitlements. We really need to make sure that we're watching the money that we spend. But I believe this is one of those issues that, it's not Democrat or Republican. This is people, folks. These are human beings that have served this country. And they're the reason why we're here tonight. And so what we need to do is what I tell people sometimes you got to get down to, and that's just brass tacks. We need to lock some politicians in that room, turn off the air conditioning, get the water, take it out. There's no key to the men's room, the women's room. It's on. And until you come up with a bipartisan program where you work together for the betterment of the people, we have to stop, oh, well, I'm doing this because Harry Reid said this. I can't do that. John Boehner said to do this. Think. Use your mind. Step out. These are people we're talking about, and we've got to do the best thing we can for those people who made it so that we can be here tonight under the banner of freedom.
There's one last to the time when we will have closing statements from the 3 candidates. Each will have 2 minutes. I guess we will do the same order we did in the beginning. Or reverse order.
No, same order.
Can we take a vote?
Follow the rules.
It doesn't make a difference.
Same order.
Follow the rules.
Same order.
It says the same order. Okay.
All right.
I guess I could mention a couple of things here that my worthy opponent talked about. He said it depends on the president. The Constitution clearly shows that the Congress is the one that appropriates the money. And they can stop appropriating. They can stop the war tomorrow by stopping the appropriation of money. They can shut down Guantanamo Bay tomorrow. They can shut down. All those dogs and everything were bought by our congressmen. And we need to get the funding under control. Also, same Ryan, but we close down Guantanamo, wean ourselves. Congress can do that. I'll do it as a congressman. We do need to get the money under control. I do ask you again, please support me. Whether you support me or not, I'd really like to work with you on we the people now around the world. There's thousands or millions of people out. We've got great organizations, a lot of people working on this, and we need to figure out a way to work together. I think that the leadership in Congress, Pelosi taking impeachment off the table, she can't do that. That's a duty. We've lost, since the Democrats came into power, we've lost over 1,100 soldiers, probably 1,200 by now. It's been the bloodiest, was the bloodiest year of the war in 2007. I went to Congress office, and it's off the table, we're not going to have impeachment. I went to Congress Moran's office, and he said, his guy said, there's only been no impeachable offenses. Our friend Kucinich has come up with
at least 35 or 40. Use my time. Well, anyway, thanks a lot for being here tonight, and I do appreciate it. And we will work on this together. Thank you. The rules do call for reverse order in the closing statement, so I'm asking Jim Congressman Moran to come next.
Well, I may survive another congressional election, but I don't think this country can survive another 4 years of the Bush-Cheney administration's policies. I think that really is a critical issue on the ballot. We have actually passed a lot of very constructive legislation, particularly over the last 2 years. But if it doesn't die in the Senate, it gets vetoed. We can't get two-thirds to override a presidential veto. So I think that this administration has actually gone backwards. I really feel that it's the most ideologically incompetent, uncaring administration in American history. We need to take back America. We need to make a better and more thoughtful investment in our educational system, particularly in the early years. We need to find ways of having a far better and less expensive healthcare system. It doesn't make sense that we pay more than any other industrialized nation, and we live less long, and we're not quite as healthy. In terms of transportation, we've got to reinvest in our physical infrastructure just as we need to, in our human infrastructure. But most of all, we need to be that moral guidepost that our founding fathers envisioned. We need to be an example to the rest of the world. We're not when we tolerate torture. We're not when we have indefinite detention, ignoring habeas corpus. We're not when we take preemptive action, initiating wars of choice. We have fallen from grace in the eyes of the rest of the world, and that's really the first thing we need to do, not through rhetoric, but through example. We are a great nation, a great people, but we need to regain that stature and that pride so that we can once again trust our government and believe in its policies. Thank you.
To be here. And friends, I just want to leave you with a quick story, if I may, please. So if I go over 2 or 3 seconds, if you could beg my pardon here. I went to speak to a group of people that you would not traditionally say, oh, wow, we've got a Republican coming to address the group here tonight, and well, let's welcome them with open arms, and I'm sure we've got a lot of things given the circumstances and the mood, the temper of this country. So I took it, and I just said, okay, well, hey, I'll be more than happy to come over and open and honest. I believe in what I stand for. So I went out, and I was just talking. I gave my presentation, talked to them about why we need to cut taxes for working-class families, why we need to get a hold of government, not just dismantle everything, but we need more accountability and responsibility. We need more honorability and more decency in the way that we do business from our members of Congress. We need to make sure that we do secure our borders and that we treat those that are here with dignity and respect, that we come up with a comprehensive immigration plan. We do need to make sure that we do need to end the war in Iraq. I explained to them my views on that I've got a son serving in the military. I do was able to get my message across about transportation and all the things we need to keep the environment clean. And when I was done, I just was there and said, okay, well, thank you so much, and applause and everything. But I got home and I had an email from the gentleman that held the event. And he said, Mark, my wife has been in politics for this long. I've served. My father was serving up in New York. I've been a lifelong Democrat all my life. And when I was all done, he said, Mark, I just want to tell you, I'm going to tell you what I told this group, and this is what I want to leave you tonight with, folks. He said this: we need to stop looking at party and start looking at people. And that's why I can stand you with a clear for you tonight with a clear conscience. And that was Howard Woodson, president, NAACP. And if he can do it, if he can free his mind and open up and say, hey, you're making too much sense. Why don't we stand here and give someone else an opportunity to serve the community? We need fresh people. We need change. I'm the guy. I want an opportunity. Thank you.
us thank all of the three candidates that have been before us tonight.